Calgary Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Once-in-a-lifetime hail means a very special opportunity to purchase a Mercedes-Benz Sprinter van. Choose from 42 options. Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, minutes from the Calgary airport.
We asked this question last hour, and let's reset it right now. The most consistent player on the Calgary Flames this regular season, a regular season that is now officially behind us, who would that be? Welcome back to the program. Time for our daily Calgary Flames roundtable. Around the table, it is Peter Klein, Pat Steinberg, and Derek Wills. The radio voice of the Calgary Flames completes our roundtable. Who was the most consistent and reliable player on the Flames this season, Mr. Wills?
Well, it's a little bit like comparing apples and oranges, unless you'll allow me to pick one player at forward and one player on defense. Or do I have to just pick one skater?
There are no rules. It's a pandemic. Good. Means there are no rules. Take your pants actually, off and it doesn't matter. Like, whatever you want to do.
Put my pants back on, whatever I want to do.
Exactly.
I think pandemic means there's more rules. But anyway, no rules for our, not on our Flames roundtable. Okay, I'm going to go with one forward and one defenseman, though. At forward, same guy that I selected as the most valuable player for the Flames in 2019-2020, Elias Lindholm. I just think that even when he's not contributing offensively, he is as reliable defensively as any other forward, and I think the best two-way forward on the team. I think one of the more underrated two-way forwards in the game. So at forward, I'd vote for Elias Lindholm. On defense, is it even a question? The captain, Mark Giordano. I know he didn't put up the numbers offensively this season that he did last season when he won the Norris Trophy, but defensively, always reliable, always tough to play against, despite the fact that he's always matched up against the other team's top players. And one of the things I love about Gio, and I think you could say the same thing, maybe to a lesser extent, about Lindholm, although Sean Monahan and Johnny Gaudreau would probably disagree with me. Anybody who played with him over the last two seasons would probably disagree with me. But I think that Mark Giordano makes whoever he's playing with, especially his defense partner, better. So I would go with Elias Lindholm at forward and Mark Giordano on defense.
Tough to argue on either of those. Lindholm was my pick. Just whether you put him at the wing, whether you put him down the middle, I thought he gave you the same thing night in, night out, and that was just high-level play at both ends of the ice. And Mark Giordano, like, you can just pencil him in 25, 27 minutes a night, and he's going to be pretty steady for you throughout. So, no, I don't disagree on either point. Wilsey and I are agreeing on a lot of these things. I don't know if he should be concerned that he's seen the same things I am, or if I've just stepped my game up to another level. But, no, I think Wilsey's right on both points.
Yeah, you have been.
Kleiner, you know what they say? Great minds think alike.
You guys have been.
There you go.
A lot
see?
Of things. That's a very good point. I gave an honorable mention to Mark Giordano for the reasons that you just stated there. Because he didn't get my MVP, and he's not getting my most consistent player, but he has to be in. Like, he's been so good this year. No, he has not been Norris Trophy good like he was last season, but that was the best season of his career. But the last 5 to 7 years, he's been one of the best defensemen in the NHL, and he has been one of the best defensemen in the NHL this season. No, he won't defend his Norris Trophy, and he's going to finish with fewer points than he did last year, but he still was, with a bullet, Calgary's best defenseman this year, and still did all the important things against top players on the other side, huge minutes, power play, penalty kill, so on and so forth. So I'm totally on board with you throwing his name out there. The guy I went with, though, for the most consistent and reliable player all year is Andrew Mangiapane, and I know that the points started to come later in the season, and it was a little drier for him on the score sheet in the early stages, first few months of the season. But I just, every single night, whether he was playing on a line with Michael Backlund and Matthew Tkachuk, or if he was playing elsewhere, I just knew exactly what you were going to get from Mangiapane. Reliable, strong, hard-nosed, good two-way game, strong cycle game, all that type of stuff. There was never a stretch where I felt that Mangiapane was ineffective. There was never a stretch where I thought he was invisible. Yes, there were stretches where the puck wasn't going in for him, or the puck wasn't going in when he was on the ice with his line, but I just felt like every single night you knew what to expect, and every single night he brought that type of game. So I went with Mangiapane. I really liked the season that he had, and obviously what he did in the last couple of months of the season and turned himself into a top six player on this team, that bodes really well for the future. I really liked his whole season, though. I thought he had a really nice year.
You know what, Pat? It's hard to argue that. The reason I didn't go in that direction is I tend to lean towards the guys who play larger roles. Mm-hmm. But to Andrew Mangiapane's credit, he was playing a larger role down the stretch because of his consistency from the start of the season, in my opinion. Never cheats you on his work. And that's the one thing about him, whether it be in practices or in games, I'm guessing off the ice as well, because he came to camp in great shape. But, you know, he's a guy who, you're right, was night in, night out, one of the hardest working players on the team. And the more opportunity that he was given, first by Bill Peters and to an even greater extent by Jeff Ward, the more he emerged as, I think, and maybe you guys will feel like I'm stretching this a little bit, but I think a part of the Flames core moving forward. I know he's a sixth round draft pick, and generally you don't think of guys as core players when they're drafted that late, certainly not this early in their career, and certainly not when they're making $15,000 above league minimum. But with the way Andrew Mangiapane progressed and the way he played consistently throughout the year and the way he really turned himself into a top six forward, playing 15 to 20 minutes a night and getting some power play time, I really think that he's trending towards being a core player on this team and hopefully for a long time to come.
I'm with you, and I think the conversation about locking him up and getting him signed to a similar type deal that Rasmus Anderson signed, it was this season, but it feels like 6 years ago.
Doesn't it?
I think that's a priority for this team and a great conversation piece is we continue doing these. This is our daily Calgary Flames roundtable. Derek Wills, Peter Klein. My name is Pat Steinberg. Okay, training camp starts on Monday at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome. Give me one under the radar player you're keeping an eye on when training camp gets going. What's one guy that maybe isn't the biggest name on the team that you have got a keen eye on?
Well, Andrew Mangiapane would be one of them. Based on what I've heard, he's been absolutely flying. Dylan Dubé would be another guy who obviously spent the vast majority of the season playing in the bottom six when he was with the Flames, but I think certainly has top six potential. And with the great set of wheels he's got, I think he could be a difference maker come the playoffs. But I'm going to go with Sam Bennett again. And maybe it's not a true under the radar guy because he has been so good as an 18-year-old, a 20-year-old, and a 22-year-old in his three trips to the Stanley Cup playoffs. But under the radar in the sense that with the way he played for the Flames against the Avalanche in those five games in last season's playoffs, I was expecting that to carry over to him truly breaking through and realizing at least most of his potential during the regular season. And once again, that didn't happen. So I think because he was inconsistent and didn't produce like he did even in his rookie season and really didn't take that next step during the regular season, that he could still be, in a way, an under-the-radar guy for the Flames come the playoffs. And I think if they're going to beat the Jets, they're probably going to need guys like Dubé and Mangiapane and Bennett to step up and kind of come out of the shadows of some of the other players.
Yeah, I like that. Bennett was going to be mine, so just kind of along the same lines, I'm going to say Mark Jankowski is someone who I'm going to keep an eye on. Pat and I have talked about, and Logan too, we've talked about there are a couple young guys with the Stockton Heat who are going to be knocking on the door for the Calgary Flames this year, or coming up next season, which I guess still this year, but nonetheless. For Mark Jankowski, this is potentially your last chance to impress before these kids who we've been hearing a lot about from Stockton make their way toward the NHL, and then you're in a fight for your job. This is an opportunity for you to show why you were a first-round pick and show why you should be sticking around with this organization. So I think this is a pretty important next few weeks, and the Flames would hope next few months for a Mark Jankowski.
And I guess it all comes down to how you define under the radar. There's no real set criteria, so I think short of Johnny Gaudreau and Sean Monahan, Elias Lindholm, Mark Giordano, probably anybody could qualify. So call me out if you think this is not under the radar, but a guy that I'm really interested to see and watch upon this return is Travis Hamonic, because Hamonic has not played a game in quite some time. Remember, the last time the Flames played a game was on March 8th against the Vegas Golden Knights, And that was the 14th consecutive game that Hamonic had missed. We were all expecting him to return on March 13th or March 12th against the New York Islanders, but that game was canceled. So the last time Hamonic played a game was February 8th when he sustained kind of that rib cartilage injury that he did in the game against Vancouver, didn't return, and had been out ever since. Hamonic has had an up and down year, but in a series against a Jets team that pretty physical, does a really good job of leaning on opposing teams, and that's one of the MOs in their game. I think Hamonic, if he's at his best and if he can be an effective player, will be really important. So I don't know if it, like, for some it might qualify, for some it might not qualify, but the fact that we haven't seen Hamonic in a hockey game since February 8th, in a lot of ways, for me, he'd been under the radar for a long time. So I'm going to go with Hamonic because I think that he's got a big part to play in this play-in series with Winnipeg.
Yeah, I like that pick as well, Pat. You know he's going to get special teams time on the penalty kill. And you know if the Flames are protecting a one-goal lead with less than 2 minutes left, that he's likely going to be moved onto a pairing with Mark Giordano as the Flames shut down pairing and defense for a big defensive zone draw. So, yeah, you're right, Travis Hamonic. It's going to be interesting to see who he's paired with. I mean, I think that there's a chance they go back to putting him and Noah Hanifin together, but who knows? Maybe he's playing on the third pairing with TJ Brody or with Eric Gustafson, or who knows where he's going to play, but definitely one of the things to watch and definitely one of the guys to watch starting on, hopefully, Monday, knock on wood.
Final topic on our daily Calgary Flames roundtable with Derek Wills, Peter Klein, and my name is Pat Steinberg. This is it's a wide open question. You can interpret it any way you want, whether it's like a specific thing or more of a all-encompassing thing. I'm curious as to where you guys go on this. What's one area of Calgary's game that you see as a real advantage for them in their play-in series with Winnipeg?
Well, their defense corps. For me, there's no comparison between the Flames and the Jets on defense. I mean, if you look at the three positions, again, based on the body of work from what we've seen so far in 2019-2020, I think you have to give the Jets the check mark and goal, not for their tandem, but for their number one guy. They've got a workhorse and a guy who is certainly a Vezina Trophy candidate in Connor Hellebuck. I like the Flames tandem better than I like the Jets tandem, although statistically speaking, I think you can make a pretty strong argument for the Jets tandem over the Flames tandem, but personally, I'd rather have the tandem of David Rittich and Cam Talbot, but Connor Hellebuck, I think, gets the check mark because of the season he had. At forward, I think it's really close. And I think it really depends on if the Flames' top players can be as good as we know they can be, then I think they have a depth advantage. If they can't be, then I think the Jets get the check mark there. But I don't think there's any ifs, ands, or buts that the Flames are more talented and deeper on defense. So I think that's the one area where they have a huge advantage over the Jets. The question for me is, can that help the Flames overcome not having the check mark in goal potentially and not having the check mark at forward potentially? But for me, they get two check marks there.
Yeah, I think, and this is three for three in agreeing with Lilsey, but the blue line is the one that stands out to me as well. Well, when you look at the conversations we've had about the Flames' blue line and how deep they can go, and that's not including a Juuso Välimäki, and the Jets, who were financially a little hamstrung for most of the season, not knowing what was going on with a Dustin Byfuglien contract, that gets figured out toward the tail end of what was the NHL season, but not with enough time for them to really figure things out on that blue line. There's still a couple pieces that I like. I think Josh Morrissey is an upgrade on almost any NHL blue line. I think the world of that kid as a player. But I think when you look at one through however many numbers you want to go through with the Flames, because they can go pretty deep on that blue line, I think it's a clear edge. But like Wilsey, in goal, it's checkmark for Winnipeg. And you look at this forward group that the Winnipeg Jets have, it's loaded with front-end talent. And the depth guys ain't bad either. So that edge on the blue line is really going to have to shine through for the Calgary Flames in this series against the Jets.
Well, and here's where I think it can, where I think the Flames have got a pretty significant edge in this series, and that's on the power play, because I think the Flames, when they're clicking, they've got a significant edge on the power play. And not comparing power play to power play, but comparing the actual matchup, because Winnipeg was not a great penalty killing team during the regular season. They were in the bottom third of the NHL. They were under 78% when it comes to their penalty kill. And I think a big reason for that is what you guys are talking about, the fact that that blue line was stretched very thin. And I think that maybe showed up most in Winnipeg's PK. Whereas the Flames, that's a top 11, top 12 power play team during the regular season. And I believe that they have got the significance, the potential to be a little bit better on the power play. They were clicking it over 21% in the regular season, just over 21%. I think they can be a little bit better. When you take a look at that talent and the fact that we all believe that Monahan and Gaudreau have more to give and didn't show us fully what they're capable of in the regular season, I think that number one power play unit's got some steps to take. Throw in the potential of having Gustafson there and really clicking as the number one power play quarterback. I just think that going up against Winnipeg's penalty kill, which was suspect during the regular season, and throwing in what you guys just talked about in terms of their questionable depth defensively, that's an area that I think swings big time to Calgary when this play-in series begins.
Yeah, and I mean, your most important penalty killer is your goaltender, but then it's the defenseman. And I just don't think the Jets have a lot of depth on defense. They don't have a lot of depth on defense. That group did a lot better than I thought they were going to do this season. I mean, you think about it. You subtract Dustin Byfuglien, Tyler Myers, and Ben Chiarot, and you get nothing in return. I mean, you also subtract Jacob Trouba, but at least they got pretty good player in return in Brady Shea. But I mean, but we're talking about a Jets blue line that is a shell on paper and talent-wise of what it was a year ago. So they just don't have the depth or the talent the Flames do on defense. But it's a really interesting point that you make, because when you first made it, Pat, I was kind of scratching my head, I'm not going to lie, because you think of some of the weapons the Jets have in their power play. You've got an elite playmaker in Blake Wheeler. You've got an elite shooter in Patrick Laine. You've got another great goal scorer in Kyle Connor. You've got a guy on the blue line who I think is really underrated, and Josh Morrissey, who can quarterback that power play. So they've got some great weapons, but it's more about the Flames' power play versus the Jets' penalty kill, I think, is your point, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think that's an area that they can exploit in the series, if what we saw in the regular season has any bearing 5 months later in the postseason, which I think is anybody's guess.
I wonder how games are going to be called. Because we're so used to going from the regular season where way more is called than in the Stanley Cup playoffs, and there's almost like a flip switch, right? It just changes. You go from game 82 and games being called this way to game one and games being called a completely different way. But with this 4 month pause between games, whatever it was for the 31 different NHL teams to game one of a qualifying series and then eventually game one of the Stanley Cup playoffs for the teams that are already there and for the teams that get through. I wonder if it's going to be a little bit easier for players to go out there and just play and not wonder what they can and can't do, knowing that the rules do seem to change going from game 82 of the regular season to game one of the playoffs. It's going to be interesting to watch as well. We're talking about all the different things we're going to watch player-wise and team-wise, but I think the officiating is going to be something that's going to have my interest as well.
3 weeks from tomorrow is when the NHL's restart is set to begin. Just crazy.
That's hard to
wrap your head around. I know.
Yeah, it is.
Monday is when training camp's supposed to start.
So. Are you sure?
I swear, I've double-checked and triple-checked the dates. July 13th is Monday, and that's what they're suggesting is going to be the start of training camp.
All right, well, hope everybody stays healthy this weekend so that doesn't get pushed back again.
Agreed. Have a good, healthy weekend, Mr. Wills. We will talk to you on Monday.
Sounds good. Have a good weekend, guys.
Daily Calgary Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Once-in-a-lifetime hail means a very special opportunity to purchase a Mercedes-Benz Sprinter van. Choose from 42 options. Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, minutes from the Calgary airport.